it's really a reflection question about the journeys that they've just described, and it can have several different versions. One version of it would be, if there's something, you know, what is it that you know now that you wish you had known when you started? Another one, another version of the question, this is from someone in the audience, basically said, have you had any humbling moments in your desire to work out of the box? And so it's just an invitation to ask each of them to comment a little bit about their own learning.
I think the thing that I am most both impressed with and troubled by in the field of philanthropy or in dealing with nonprofits or in dealing with issues where we need to have partnerships between the various sectors is that the business is a business of both head and heart, and seldom do we get the two together. Essentially, if we look at our biggest risk with our risky grants, it's clearly the capacity of our grantees to do what we would like to see them do. Essentially, we are the ultimate outsourcer. We have no action arm other than what our grantees do. And their capacity is really determined as much as anything else by how they deal with their head and their heart, where their emotions come and where their logic comes, whether they have domain knowledge or passion or just problem-solving ability. It becomes extremely difficult to see how that comes together. Really, the most interesting, most humbling, most difficult part of my journey is to get this head and this heart together. And it doesn't always work to just to think of a foundation as another bank and a grant as another loan.
So has it changed you?
Yeah.
How?
I probably found a little bit of heart. It's clearly showed me that all logic and all mind at solving problems doesn't necessarily get you where you need to go.
For us, the journey over the last several years has been a journey of learning, and we continue learning. We discovered through the power of each individual finding their own power to make good things happen, and that power resides in the marketplace, and therefore our approach, which is sector agnostic, basically says the sector social change can occur in the social sector, in the public sector, in the private sector. And so that important learning for us is what resulted in us, in effect, closing down the foundation, which is what we are about to do. It will no longer exist, the Omidyar Foundation. It will continue investing in nonprofits as a 501. So we will continue investing in nonprofits, but we will not be operating as a foundation. We'll be operating as a network, which will invest also, as I said earlier, in the public sector and the social and the private sector. And that's been a very important learning for us.
So more personally, Iqbal, what do you wish someone had told you 3 years ago when you embarked on this journey that would have been helpful to you to know?
I think if we had discovered that that's possible, that you don't actually have to execute social change only through a philanthropic model of a foundation, that you can do it in many different ways, that learning would have probably resulted in us restructuring into a network much sooner.
What is it that in your mind is good from the outside that you're now trying to do from the inside?
You have three folks up here who work for three remarkably successful, focused, disciplined, thoughtful, intelligent, impatient, ambitious for good human beings, and they expect the same from us. And that means we have to be highly strategic, more focused. We have to make those big bets, but we do so with good processes behind them. And we are betting that the outcomes will be good more often than they aren't. We're able to take risks. We're encouraged to take risks. But we don't do so casually. We do so with a great deal of rigor and honesty.
What is most challenging or interesting about working with a donor that still feels that it's their money, even though they've given it over into this kind of public, semi-public trust?
I guess it depends on the viewpoint. What does it mean by giving money over? The way I see it, actually, Pierre has. He has committed his entire net worth to social change. The only difference is he didn't put it into a artificial entity created for tax purposes. Instead, he's committing it through multiple vehicles. So from his perspective, he's not saying, I'll put it into an entity, then give 5% of it because I have to, and 95% sits of it in an endowment for investment. In fact, it says, I'll put 100% into play for social change. And so the strategy will drive the funding, not the structure will drive the funding. Mm-hmm. So it's a fundamental different approach.
So what's challenging about working with a founder donor or interesting?
I've talked with some colleagues and it's kind of humorous when Tom Reese at the Kellogg Foundation describes turning to the picture on the wall and saying, "How are we doing, Mr. Kellogg?" Well, we don't have to do that at the Skoll Foundation. Jeff lets us know how we're doing, and he lets us know via email, and he lets us know in person, and he cares intensely about the work of the foundation, the impact. He likes to meet all the social entrepreneurs whom we're supporting. He wants to see the results. He wants to track with the impact and the performance. So our performance as a foundation and as professionals in the foundation is absolutely aligned and co-created, really, with our partner organizations. And he's dialed in. He cares. He's not involved in the day-to-day affairs of the foundation. It's highly strategic, but he is keenly interested in the performance and the results.
Yeah, just a couple of thoughts. With Gordon and Betty, we also have two of the Moore sons coming along, so we get to sort of deal with this generation change. So it's a broader family picture. We also only have half of Gordon's Intel stock, so there's a market out there that will eventually vote as to whether or not we've done the job. But the two thoughts I think that are sort of interesting, one is that Gordon turned the money over to us because he thought we could spend it better than he could. Otherwise, Gordon would have spent it himself. There's no doubt about it. And so you wind up with this enormous feeling of responsibility to spend somebody else's money well while they're watching you do it. And Gordon is a great delegator and an enormous gentleman and a thoughtful person who is always ready to help if you ask, but believes that you're running the place and you want to please him in a way that he is satisfied with what you're doing, but you know that he's not going to be satisfied for 10 years because what we do really doesn't have enough good measurements in the first 10 years. The second companion piece that goes along with this is that there is a lot of money, particularly a lot of new money on the West Coast that has not shown up in foundations yet. And so I think we all sort of carry this burden to basically create outcomes, changes, social changes in a way that will continue to attract this kind of philanthropy. Because there's a lot of folks that we all know that haven't quite bellied up to the bar, and probably for good reason. They are questioning and doubting in the long run whether or not philanthropy works to their satisfaction. And so if you're Warren Buffett and say, I'm going to give it all away, but not when I'm around because I don't want to see the sausage made, essentially, you're getting a point of view about the business. So this obligation that I think we all have in the field, not necessarily to invent something new, but to continue to encourage this enormous amount of new wealth to go into the field, is also one of the interesting challenges.
So, fascinating challenge. Your job is to set up a foundation that, you know, will be there 100 or 200 years from now, that's still a family foundation. Do you have an answer to this question, Iqbal, about working with Pam and Pierre?
Yeah, I think, you know, clearly they are both very young, very entrepreneurial, with a very long-term commitment to sustainable social change. But the journey that I've just described shows the nature of the way they think. It is truly embedded in there is a level of ambiguity, which we think is healthy because it is the ability to be adaptive and flexible.
And so I'm interested in having a little bit more of a conversation about this issue of effectiveness and measurement. How did the need to measure outcomes influence what you chose to fund?
It's a good question, particularly both the consequences and the unintended consequences. We define internally an outcome as a change in institutions, circumstances, or people. So in one respect, we're all dealing with change. It just depends upon how you want to categorize it. Because Gordon is a chemist, is a scientist, he likes to hypothesize about things and then do an experiment and see if his hypothesis is right. We are pretty much locked into that kind of grant making. It means that we have had to ignore or avoid a lot of important issues because we could not figure out how to measure it. Probably the biggest thing that we avoid is primary education. We have been unable to measure it.
When you say measure, what do you mean?
Want to be able to measure whether or not you're creating change in a way that's relevant to primary education.
So it means numbers? It's a quantitative measure?
No, it means how many good productive citizens do you produce 15 or 20 years later? Now, you could probably figure out some test to measure that, but the nature of our democracy is not to measure that, and it's entirely appropriate that we don't. That's a different set of issues. We're doing salmon because you can count the little buggers twice in their lifetime, once when they go downstream and another time when they come back upstream. And so in the case of salmon, we had to ask ourselves, was it important and could we make a difference? Not could we measure it? And that was really the reason. We sat down with a bunch of biologists and environmentalists and said, what can you count? We know we can't count all the species. In fact, we know we probably are not identifying more than 10% of the species in the world. So that made it difficult for us to find something to do. It allows you, on the one hand, to direct your grant making around a feedback mechanism, and at the same time, it forces you to essentially say no really early in the process on some incredibly important issues.
And have you or the Moores had any second thoughts about that? Can you imagine a day that might shift? Do you think you got to play it out 10 or 20 years first and see?
Yeah, I cannot imagine a day when it's going to shift, but it's likely it will. It's one of those things. Part of philanthropy is this factor of the heart. And there are a lot of things you can't measure. And so you ask yourself the question, can I affect it? And that becomes an exercise in measurement in and of itself, but you start to measure different things. And pretty soon you talk yourself not into measuring outcomes or ultimate state of changes, but in measuring process. I don't know whether I'm going to have productive citizens, but by God, I've got 437 kids going to college that couldn't afford it, and that's what I'm going to measure. Mm-hmm. And so the tendency is to revert to a sense of process, partly because process in and of itself is pretty easy to describe, and partly because it feels good. And as much as we try to stay on this outcome, ultimate change, understand how it works, we will probably degrade, which may or may not be the right word, so I don't want to use it in an emotive sense, to more and more process measurement.
Mm-hmm.